gathered in their masses.
Get out of the way. Hey everybody, this is David Zafra. Welcome to another episode of Can You Edit That Out? Today's episode is my interview with Herd Sims, who is the guy that is in charge of Glassless Minds. And if you follow the podcast at all and listen to the Sophia Sandoval episode, she was actually recommended by Herd Sims. I'd done this interview. All these interviews are so old at this point. I'd set it aside, and then I found the Taylor and Dallas episodes, and so this coming out a little bit late. It was a good episode, and his show at Glassless Minds is really great. So if anybody in the North County area is ever wanting to try poetry, or I mean, they allow pretty much anything that's performance art. But I would check that out. And even if you're not wanting to get on the show, it's great to watch. And that group of people is really supportive, and I always enjoy going over there and trying out some weird new stuff. So hopefully you guys enjoy this, and thanks for listening, guys. I'll check in with you later.
All right, guys. Welcome to another episode of Can You Edit That Out? My name is David Zafra, and I'm talking right now with...
Herd Sims.
All right. And can you give us a little bit of background, what you do as an art, so that the people can know what we're talking about today?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm a spoken word performance artist. A majority of that is poetry, free flow. And with that, I also co-host a open mic in Oceanside. Mm-hmm. And with that one, with us being a nonprofit, we also have a youth program. So I co-host Glasses Minds and Glasses Youth.
Nice. I was there last night. That was a good show. You want to tell me a little bit about how you thought it went? Because it was a good turnout.
Oh, yeah, yeah. we keep having these hit and miss nights, yeah, where it will have 50 people in their rooms packed. It's like a sauna. It smells like teenage genitals, all kinds of bad stuff. And then we'll have nights where it'll be 5 people.
Yeah.
So the last night was a good one. It went very well. People loved the feature, but we had incidents with potential, I don't want to say a meth addict, but I'll just say a drug enthusiast. And he was just off the chains, yeah, yelling. I had to kick him out, and he just kind of hung out outside until we let out. But outside of that, people love the poetry feature. People love the art from the visual artist that was there.
Yeah.
And we generated a lot of interest from some just random walker by teenage kids who I let in free.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so yeah. It was good. It was a plus.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think, it must be hard to get people out, especially it's hard to get people out to anything. Mm. To get people to pay money for anything is difficult too, especially internet time.
Not in San Diego, actually. in San Diego, because we our base and our main platform is spoken word poetry.
Yeah.
With San Diego having right now the third highest ranked poetry venue in America.
Oh, wow.
And we have a very strong culture of spoken word poetry with Ant Black and Rudy Francisco. Simply Cat used to perform out here, mm-hmm, a lot. She's even performed at Glassless Minds once. So with things like that and such a strong culture behind it, people already know what spoken word is, so they're already going to come.
Yeah.
The hard part is getting them to realize, oh, $5 isn't that much.
Yeah.
Because they'll easily drop, what is a movie now, $12? Mm-hmm. Like, a soul and a little bit of blood. So yeah, they'll easily do that. They'll easily go out and spend $15, $20 at a bar.
Yeah.
But $5, oh, Lord, no.
Yeah, I know what you mean. No, when I first started comedy, I ran my own show. Oh. Very similar, just like in an empty space and just fill it up with chairs. The same thing, $5 to get in. But it was difficult. How long have you guys been running now?
Glassless Minds officially has been 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 4 1/4 as of August.
That's a really good run.
Yeah. Consistently, we've only missed one show. No, 2 shows. I lied. Okay. One show when Roland, the host, his grandmother had passed, and one show with that big blackout. Other than that, we're very consistent. Even when we were technically homeless, we had to run.
Oh, so it hasn't always been at the same place?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yes and no. We've been at Sunshine Brooks Theater, and then when they changed owners, the people who own it now didn't necessarily want us there, So we had to run it off the beach, and then we were at A Word With You Press, which was a little printing shop down off of Tamarack in Oceanside. What's that? T-Name Street. Whatever. It's by, it's buying the Flying Pig Bar.
Yeah.
Find the bar.
You'll I know Flying Pig.
Yeah. It was right over there, and then we came back to Sunshine Brooks.
Yeah. And so was it in that little room before?
Yeah. Okay. That room was black.
It's always in the. Oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
So we can always figure out how long people have been in glassless minds by what color they remember the room.
When they first came?
Yeah.
That's great. How many people have you had there that have been there since the beginning? Or how, like, what are some of the people that are, like
the,
there?
The core members?
Yeah.
Joe Limer, he's a professor at Palomar.
Yeah.
Roland, Logan, myself, and since the beginning, just us and Blanca. And Blanca. Mm-hmm. I don't want to negate her.
Yeah.
She puts in a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah.
You guys have had, I go and I see a lot of the same people there whenever I stop by, so you guys have a pretty good following and everything.
Oh,
then.
Yes. Oh, it's actually really awesome. Yeah. They almost earn their stripes by if they have a glassless shirt. It, mm-hmm. Kind of like the color of the room, you can tell how long they've been with us by what shirts they have.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was the same core folks every 2 weeks will come out. The same kids every 3 weeks will come out for Glassless Youth. And they're dedicated. They always come. If Glassless has a show, like with the Oceanside Library, like we did a couple of weeks ago, or like we have coming up on the 9th, they will definitely be there.
Yeah.
We don't even have to promote it too much, but we do just to get new folks out.
Yeah.
It's just getting them to go to other things. Because we want to support other venues and keep this whole, not even spoken word, just the open mic life alive because, you know, it's its own culture.
Yeah.
And each one has its own culture. So you want to support that.
But definitely, I mean, poetry itself is probably its own subculture that I know nothing about. So, I mean, I just find it very interesting to find out the little different groups that you find for each different art. I mean, I didn't even know that there was a poetry scene. So could you tell me a little bit about what that, where is this, how do you get into this? Like, you go into other places and do poetry as well, and you run into other people that are, I mean, how does it work?
Well, like, the form that we do at Glassless and that you'll find more prevalent is, people call it slam poetry, but realistically it's just, free flow poetry that stems from the beatniks, really.
Yeah.
So if you just take out the rhythm, the black turtlenecks and the berets, that's exactly what we're doing. That's why you see the snapping and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what a slam is, it's a poetry competition. And this is why we have the time limit of 3 minutes usually, because in a slam you have 3 minutes with a grace period of 10 seconds.
Yeah.
After that, you're docked points. Yada, yada, yada. That started in Chicago in the 1980s by a construction worker by the name of Mark Say What, Mark So What.
Mm-hmm.
Then a few years later, they started doing more poetry slams throughout America.
Yeah.
It got so big back in the 90s, like 1991, actually. They had the very first national poetry competition in New York.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 2000, they have an international poetry competition that is held in Johannesburg, Africa.
Oh, wow.
Poets fly from all over the world to go to that.
Yeah.
And then you have, like, you know, the Euros. There's everywhere.
Yeah.
And each community has its own little scene, if you will. So you go to San Diego, you're going to see it in Glassless, a very similar style, very comfortable. Like, talking about a lot of dark stuff. You want to open your veins by the time you're done, you know. But then you go to L.A., it's very theatrical. It's like a lot of use of the hands, choreographed, a lot of team and group of poems where you got two or three people in there.
Yeah.
And then you'll bump into things like, say you go to New York where it's really heavy and about the words. And they use a lot of academic kinds of poetry, a lot of iambic pentameter, a lot of like catalog poems, a lot of epistles. Where here in San Diego, it's just a lot of, here's my pain, blah, I'm going to cry for 10 minutes. Now give me points for no reason because it has no bearing on my life.
That's interesting.
But, yeah.
So as a person like going in from your first open mic, mm-hmm. what is like kind of the trajectory to make it, to become a poet, I guess? Because, I mean, for comedy, it's a very specific type of, not specific because there's many ways to to get to wherever you need to go. Yeah. But for the most part, it's like you start at the open mics and then people start putting you on shows. And from there, you get past that club so that like the comedy clubs will have you on and doing shows regularly. And then usually people that start in small scenes want to move to big scenes. Like if you're from San Diego or I don't know, wherever else they have. I mean, they're all over the place, but you know, you want to eventually try to get to New York or LA.
Yeah.
And that's like if you, they have, it's like, well, if you want to do a more stand up, you go to New York. If you want to do movies and TV and comedy, you go to LA. And there's like this very, I don't even, and then, you know, there's also the path of like doing the road and like traveling to do comedy. I mean, there's like specific paths that everybody tries to aim for when they get into it from the beginning. And it's almost like little check marks, you know, you get to. So what is that? What is that for poetry, for the poets? What do you guys do?
In the poetry world, get used to pain.
Yeah,
definitely. I guess that's with anything. You know, life is reps, reps, reps.
Yeah.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger said. But first, if anyone who wants to get into spoken word poetry and make a name for themselves, be the next Rudy Francisco.
Yeah.
First, you're going to have to just start going to your open mics. Respect your elders.
Yeah.
You don't know who is what and who can do what for you. Like, a lot of young kids will come into Glasses Minds and they'll be not really disrespectful, but dismissive of, say, Cheyenne, who's their own age. But Cheyenne has performed nationally at a youth competition 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So she's someone you want to respect. She can do things for you. So always respect your elders. You don't know who these people are. And then start going to slams. Get on a team.
Yeah.
If you can't get on a team, and a lot of poets do this, if you can't, say, get on a team in San Diego, which is very cutthroat, it's brutal.
Yeah,
getting on the San Diego Slam team is like getting on the Bulls.
Yeah.
He's like, you definitely have to know what you're doing. Yeah. They're not going to be effing with you at all.
Yeah.
So once you get on a team and you make it to Nationals and you do your thing at Nationals, keep getting on teams and then not necessarily get a bookie, because there are poetry bookers. Mm-hmm. It's really weird that that's a thing, but that's a legitimate career path.
Yeah,
it's really freaking weird. But get a bookie. So all you have to do is show up to the event.
Okay.
But until that point and you make that money, just keep going to open mics.
Yeah.
Keep making friends, networking, and then eventually people will start putting you on to feature.
Interesting.
Not all of them are paid. Like, I still have never been paid for a feature, but Roland has.
Yeah.
But I've been paid to perform at a high school assembly, which is oddly uncomfortable because you're like, oh, my God, I remember high school. Then you remember I graduated. And what the hell are they going to do? Who's like, I have a book. Why are you judging me? But anyway, so you keep doing the open mics and you keep doing your slams. And while you're doing that, keep getting better. Keep going, honing in on your craft. Go to workshops.
Yeah.
The difference between a good poet and a great poet, workshops.
Yeah. Because where are the workshops?
Workshops are the most, it's masochism.
Yeah.
It's 50 Shades of Grey for poets. You go up, you do your poem, usually something personal, and then a room of your peers, usually people that you kind of don't like, but you respect them a little bit, tell you how awful it is and tell you you're breathing wrong, tell you you're using too much of this, your voice inflection is a match, you're looking down too much, but your clothes are off, everything. They'll tear you apart. And then what they'll also do are distraction drills.
Yeah.
This is why Glasses Minds, the poets, you can tell the poets who go to workshops because, as you know, sirens go off because you're right there by the fire department, and for some reason there's always an alarm once a night. The poets don't get distracted by it. They just keep going.
Yeah.
The audience will be looking around, but the poet's like, no, fuck it.
Yeah.
I'm used to this.
Definitely.
Because in a distraction drill, somebody will start talking over you. Someone will walk up and start touching you. People will throw shit at you. I've actually had someone stand outside of the room with the door closed and yell their poem because I did not believe that they were actually feeling their own words.
Mm.
And now it's one of their best poems, but, you know, it's like, you get humiliated.
Yeah.
So
it's fun.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, you get your pride broken down a lot.
Yeah.
And
love
all
that.
The time, just keep working at it, keep working. And what I know a lot of the main folks did, like, as you just brought up, go on the road, they said, fuck it. They don't want to do that work. They just want to get their word out there. And this one girl, her name is, not Trezé, I apologize. Jesus, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting my friend's names. Well, anyway, she moved to Las Vegas because she got a teaching job out there. and started her own slam team.
Yeah.
And was like, you know what? I don't really care. She just went for the experience. But she would network the entire time she was at the slam and started booking shows at the slam. When she got back to Vegas, she finished a school year and just did a whole little chicken circuit throughout California, made her way up to Oregon, and then all the way down to New York, and then flew back home.
Wow.
And that's how she got her name out there.
I think it's interesting that you bring up networking. How much is there networking in poetry?
Dude, just like anything, man. Yeah. Just like how... It's big. Yeah, just like... Because before people want to work with you, they want to know what you're about or who you are.
Yeah.
Is you hosted a show and you're doing the podcast. I'm sure you have 101 people sending you text messages, hitting you up on Facebook, sending you a Twitter.
Right now it's a secret.
Yeah, right.
A lot of my projects are secrets until I know if they're good or not.
Brilliant. Freaking, you know, it's like everybody wants to work with you, so you want to know who you're working with before you wind up getting in the bed with the devil. And then you're like, oh, this is terrible, and I have to finish this project now.
Yeah. So you see the benefit in that then?
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you don't have to say names or anything, but that you know that's not that good but have been able to have success because of networking? Or is it poetry very, very merit-based enough that
yes
doesn't?
Yes and no. There's one guy, well, let me rephrase that. Yes and no. He's a local poet. He is very good. Legitimately, he is good. I like him a lot. But by way of where he's at and been on the national scene and has been touring, has a book out, no, not at all. I'm a terrible poet. I'm better than him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's a nice guy. He networks.
Yeah.
And he does the smartest thing that any artist, I don't care if you're a comedian, you're an actor, you're a writer, you're an avant-garde German basket weaver. You have to always say first, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
How can I help you? So everybody's like, well, I kind of owe this guy a favor. I might as well book him, you know? So he did it very smart.
Yeah. No, I see that a lot. That's really fascinating to me how much certain arts have in common. So, you know, it's really interesting to see. So why this? Why did you get into poetry? And I don't just mean like how you came about it and the fact that you got interested and you're like, yeah, this one. But what about your psychology, your brain just made this the fit for you?
Oh, man, that's a hard question. Well, how I got started was I bumped into Roland Drunk at the beach one night, and he was like, oh, yeah, I'm throwing this open mic.
So you started doing poetry before you?
No, Glasses Minds was, well, you know, you got your standard stuff from high school.
Yeah.
But what really made it, like, stick for me was when I realized I can impact people, because I'm not doing anything fancy with my life, you know. I work retail like most of the people in our generation.
Mm-hmm.
My college education failed me like most people in our generation. So I was like, well, I want to be of use. I want to actually help someone. And when I started, not necessarily getting good at writing, but when I started making points, started internalizing my poems and taking ownership of them, I started seeing that people were like, yeah, you know, I've been through something similar. Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in this really weird altruistic way, but not really altruistic, because I do it because it feels good for me, helping someone get through other stuff. So that's what kept me writing, what really got me deep into it and got me into facilitating workshops and looking for youth to help them get out of a lot of stuff. Because I've actually seen two clinically depressed girls, one who was actually institutionalized for a suicide attempt.
Oh, wow.
And one who was a victim of sexual assault. Both 16, both come out of depression, stopped taking their meds, not because of therapy, because they had an outlet for it. And that was one of the things that just kept me going. Mm-hmm. So now that's just what I do. It's ingrained.
Yeah. So you got, tell me a little bit more about, you guys were drunk at the beach together and.
Oh, no. Roland was passing out flyers and I was drunk at the beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a whole history behind my alcoholism. There's a reason why I have that poem where I talk about being sober for 3 years.
Yeah.
But, I was just kind of stumbling around with a Sprite bottle that had zero Sprite in it.
Yeah.
And he was like, hey, how's it going, Herd? We met each other. Actually, this is a fun story of how Roland and I met. We met playing acoustic percussion instruments at a Sprinter event that was put on. And we've just been boys ever since.
Yeah, yeah.
But so he bumped back into me. And because Roland remembers everyone's name at all times,
yeah.
he stopped me, you know, he invited me to the show. I go, and I'm like, I could do this. And then I couldn't. I went to a workshop and got my pride hurt.
Yeah.
So right off the bat, I failed at a poem. I was stuttering, terrified, hated the mic, hated the stage, but I couldn't stop doing it.
Yeah.
It was really weird.
Interesting.
It's like a best drug ever. You know, it's only $5 and you don't regret it. There's never been one time where I said, I wish I didn't go to that open mic.
Definitely. So, but, so getting a little deeper into this, why did that appeal to you? Why did it feel, first of all, good to kind of like have a little bit of your ego tested? Why did it feel good to be able to help people or connect with people? These are all things that are very positive, but can you think back to growing up, like what were the signs that you were kind of like, you needed to do something, not just mm-hmm. poetry, but like you needed something creative maybe, or something that gave you self-fulfillment? Can you trace that back to
actually,
anything?
Because I bring it up a lot. So think about when you were a kid, and listener, think about when you were a kid. You were always told not to do this, not to talk that way, not to say this, not to do that. It was a lot of knots. And then finally you find something, whether you are 14 or you're 37, where it's okay to say it. It's okay to think this way. It's okay to talk about your depression. It's okay to talk about how you got drunk one night and drove a car and crashed it. It's okay to talk about how you got raped. Oh, and guess what? Now other people identify with it. You can see it in their eyes. They're actually listening. People care about what you're saying.
Yeah.
You don't get that often in life. You know, I mean, people do a lot of talking. You just look at your Facebook right now. There's a lot of talking. How many people are actually listening?
Yeah.
So it lets you feel like you're a human being again. It takes us back to our nature where we were sitting at a campfire. Grug and Ugg were sitting there saying their grunts to each other. It's back to that. It's the origins of speech. And that is highly important. It's something that's getting lost. So the fact that people... When people come into, rather be Glasses Minds or Elevated or the Ruckus down in Encinitas, any open mic whatsoever, even the comedy open mics, there's that kinship because everyone in there is hurting for some reason. Mm-hmm. Everyone that you look at in this building on the street is hurting from something. And it's up to you to find out what it is, and it's your human duty to help them out of it.
Yeah.
And the best way to help them out of it is let them talk it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like... Your mouth is going to help you think. That's why people talk to themselves when they're in the car. It's why people mutter to themselves when they're irritated. It helps them think it out. So now, not only are you helping, you thinking it out, you're thinking out loud to someone else. There's a poet named Superb, or Super B, whichever one you want to call him. Some people, for some reason, think it's named Super B. And he says, he's not a poet. He just says things that he needs to hear, and sometimes other people want to hear it. And that's the best way I've heard it put, you know? Yeah.
How many shows or how often do you perform?
How often do I perform?
Yeah.
I've taken a little hiatus this year, so I've only been doing Glasses Minds, and that's here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But if this question was asked last year, I was doing Glasses Minds both days of the month. Then I would go to Elevated. I would go to – yeah, so last year I was performing at least 3-4 times a week. Now I'll probably perform twice a month.
Yeah.
But I'm using this as my rest year. Okay. I'm just stockpiling on poems and memorizing.
Yeah. You're working on that right now, then just trying to write more and practice and stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
do you have anything else like in the works right now?
Other than trying to build up Glasses Youth and make that something that is actually solid and it's on its own.
Yeah.
Because kids need stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely.
I look around, especially Oceanside. I look around Oceanside and all I see is 12-year-old girls pushing strollers and 14-year-old boys stoned. They need something to do.
Yeah.
And the city of Oceanside's not providing it for them. Not every kid can throw a perfect spiral football.
Mm-hmm.
Not every girl wants to be a cheerleader. They need something. Everyone can pick up a pen. So that's the main thing that I'm focused on is get all these little rap kids, get them something.
Why did that suddenly start, or maybe not suddenly, but why does that interest you? As a, like, what about your nature, like, makes you want to reach out and help people? Like, is it partly due to you having a rough upbringing and wanting to kind of, like, remedy that? Or you think that maybe there's something more going on about you?
Well, with me, it wasn't that I had a rough upbringing. Actually, I'm a kid from the suburbs. Google Roseville, California. I mean, example, that's where Molly Ringwald's from. It's the widest place in California. So it's not like I had a rough upbringing, but I was the only child. Both my parents worked, so I spent a lot of time alone. And with that time being spent alone, I got into the liquor cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
So that caused a lot of issues in my life. And then with that, you know, early college, you do a lot of partying with your nose. And so you're dealing with that kind of stuff. And, like, with all that, the drugs, the alcohol, and then next thing you know, you're in your mid-20s and you're like, what the fuck have I done with my life? Nothing.
Yeah.
Awesome. So if I can help one fucking kid not do those stupid things, they're going to drink, they're going to smoke weed. But if I can get them to think, well, all right, maybe they don't need to try cocaine. Like, maybe they don't need to drink every weekend. If I can get them to think, hey, maybe I'm fine with just doing my homework this Saturday night, I've done my job.
Mm-hmm.
And because I don't have a wife, I don't have kids, these little motherfuckers are mine. So yeah. I got to take care of them.
Yeah, definitely. If it wasn't this, do you think you would still need something else to fill that, whatever it is that you get from poetry, this kind of like fulfilling feeling of helping people? Do you think you would have that if you didn't have this?
No, not at all. This is all I got.
Yeah.
Like, no, not at all.
Would you have tried to seek something out that would give you that, though? Do you think you just need, if you're sitting at home, like I know like today, I had a shoot. I'm filming a movie right now,
yeah.
And something went wrong. The shooting got canceled, and immediately my brain kind of goes into panic mode because I need something to keep me busy.
Oh yeah.
Do you relate to that at all?
Oh yeah. Well, I think every artist does. Yeah. That's how we become artists, because you know, like there's only so much TV you can watch.
Yeah.
Excuse me. There's only so much internet you can be on. There's only so much porn you can watch and jerk off to. I mean, it's like eventually you chafe and it just turns into a bad day. So, like, what happens? We turn to our paints. We turn to our pens. We try to make people smile. I mean,
yeah. Do you have anxiety?
Oh, God, yes. Especially before any mic time.
Yeah.
So, like, when I saw you pacing, I was like, you're right, man. I was like, just nervous. Like, oh, I understand.
Yeah.
I do that thing where, you're just fucking calm. Nobody would ever think that you were nervous ahead.
On stage or off stage?
On stage, bro.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Like, you were smooth. You're silky smooth, like Zoolander said. But freaking me, I start talking fast.
Yeah.
I'm like if Tech N9ne was a poet. It's like, I think he said something really dope, but yeah. It was really fast.
So the nervousness doesn't go away when you get on stage?
It's gotten better.
Okay.
Especially last year, because you know, I was on stage so much.
Yeah.
But before, no.
Interesting.
When I feature, it does, though, because on a mic, you know, you got one shot, 5 minutes, and it's one poem. You want to be perfect. You can't fuck it up. But, you know, if you got 30 minutes,
yeah,
it's a little bit easier. It's like, I better get comfortable because they're going to be seeing me for a minute, and I better do a good job because they paid. Oh, no. You know? So, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, the nervousness, it'll go away if I know that I'm doing well. But as soon as I screw up, those thoughts are going in your head like, that's not the line. Oh, no. But I hide it. I hide it well.
Yeah.
It's not as noticeable as it used to be. But I guess, you know, when you get your stage legs.
Yeah, definitely. Talking back to, you said you like were alone a lot growing up.
Yeah.
Well, what was that all about? You grew up in a nice place, but your parents were just not around, or
yeah. You know, dad worked, mom worked.
Yeah.
And most of my friends played video games. Or actually, let me be real. I was a nerd. I didn't have friends, and we moved around a lot as well. So I spent my first 2 years in high school in Rialto, where if you've ever been to that shithole of California, you understand you don't go outside because you're either going to be beaten up by thugs or you're going to be beaten up by the police.
Okay.
So I just got used to not going outside. And so I spent my entire childhood in front of the TV.
Yeah.
And that didn't actually break until I was about a junior in high school when I discovered drugs and alcohol were fun.
Yeah.
But
did you break up more socially after that?
Not really, because I've always been kind of a loner because yeah. of, like, you know, your first 17 years on Earth, you're just in front of a TV. And then,
yeah.
So it wasn't really this big breakout. That didn't really happen until early in college.
Mm-hmm.
And that was still kind of,
yeah.
But, so.
Did you have a pretty good relationship with your parents?
Not really.
No.
Well, you know, standard.
Do you guys talk
stuff.
Still?
Oh yeah. No. Yeah. I
well, you close now?
Yeah. We're across the country from each other, and we're the closest we've ever been. But, you know, that's the part of growing up. You know, when you're 16-year-old kid, like, fuck you, Dad. But he's just been a dad. Like, if he wasn't, you'd probably need to reevaluate your lifestyle. But so, you know, I was just alone and watching TV, and I didn't really develop a lot of social skills. So
what did you want to do then? You had no interests?
No, yeah, no. I was literally that kid who was like, what do you want to do in Europe? Live. I just want to be alive. I don't know. Like, I didn't figure out what I want to do. Actually, you know what? I still don't know what I want to do with my life, man. I don't know what I want to be when I grow up.
But you do know that you want to have something outside of just the typical life.
Oh, yeah.
You want, there's a little bit more now. You have this poetry. When you have an art, does that help kind of like give you direction?
Oh, yeah. But I think with a majority of artists, you start branching out and expanding in your art or trying other arts, but you never have the, like, I want the 401k and the career. It's like, no, because that'll take away from writing. You can't have that. Exactly. You know, it's like, priors are all screwed up.
Oh, well, maybe.
Yeah, but know what, though? I've noticed the starving artist is usually the happiest person in the room.
Yeah.
So there's something to it.
Definitely. I think it's way better.
It was like,
I wouldn't know what I would do with myself if I didn't have something.
Oh, yeah. It's called heroin. Just like, well, yeah. Every artist in the 60s.
You reach out to find whatever, give you something to feel, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
It was like, you just turn into Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah. So you just, what do you, so right now you're sober.
Yes.
And, you're just working on your art. Do you have any vices to keep you busy? is work your vice? Is it kind of taking away from your normal life? Or do you have a good balance of everything?
It's a decent balance. Yeah. I think my vice would be the gym. Is the standard, like...
Okay.
If I have free time, I'd rather be lifting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You want to go out and party? I could be lifting. Like, when you text me, I was like, oh, I'm deadlifting right now, so you want to meet next to my work, because I'm not going to stop this. Like, this is a thing. Yeah. This is what stops me from writing. Actually, it's the only thing that stops me from writing.
Okay.
No, I don't drink. I smoke cigarettes occasionally, like, maybe one every few days.
Yeah.
I don't go out and go on the hunt for some girls or anything like that. I'm very calm, relaxed. You know, it's like, I've gotten to that aging point where you just kind of plateau out and you're like, nah, I'm cool. Like, there's no point in me running out and doing anything stupid.
So right, the main things that keep you busy right now then are gym, writing, and working on the open mics and everything.
Yeah.
That's pretty,
yeah, so. and organizing shows for that, because...
Yeah. Do you start feeling like you're kind of like... I don't know, losing certain social circles because of that?
Yeah, but...
If you kind of feel like really you're just not like a normal person sometimes?
Yes, I do, but what am I really losing?
Yeah.
I mean, I have genuine friends that I can depend on.
Okay, you still see... Yeah. You have friends still then.
Yeah.
Okay.
You come to classes, you see, like, yeah. I mean...
Any friends outside of poetry?
Yeah. Nah, I have a few comedian friends, a few friends who paint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're all involved in some sort of art.
Yeah, yeah,
a lot of friends are visual artists and graph artists, a lot of hip-hop artists. But if you're not...
Do you hang out with them outside of, like, okay.
Yeah, legitimate friends.
Okay, cool. Sorry.
Real people. But, like, just Johnny on the spot who wants to go drink a beer? No. Yeah. I don't even know how to socialize. Every time, this is me at a party. Cool, I'm going to stand in this corner now because I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And your slang is scaring me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it's the wrong kind of party.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were to get like a party and not like just something where you hang out with all your friends, I'm sure that would be totally fine. And
oh,
you'd
yeah.
be, yeah, it's completely different.
Yeah, it's like Glasses has parties.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you know who Carla Cordero is, but her and her boyfriend Mario, you're already gone by the time she went on the mic.
Oh, okay.
She was on the slam team this last year.
Okay.
But she's one of the head members of Glasses Minds, so she throws Christmas parties and Walking Dead viewing parties, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, sounds fun.
And it gets ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, there was one where they did a surprise open mic on us and had a keg of beer.
Nice.
So as the night progressed, it got very interesting. And I'm just there turning up with my Sprite.
Yeah.
And, you know, you meet people like that because she is a master's program. So she's got friends from high school. She's got friends from college. She's got friends from her master's. Her boyfriend's in a master's program as well. So same thing. So you meet a lot of people. But I've just noticed I don't have anything in common with non-artists where yeah. I want to talk about, because, you know, artists talk about either their art or just random things that they can write about.
Yeah.
And you're talking about whatever insert stupid rap artist yeah. I don't care about's doing.
So is it hard for you in that situation? Like if you have a non-artist there and you're in a group of... Is it hard for you guys to include that person when all you guys want to do is talk about poetry and talk about...
Oh, God, I always feel bad for them. It's, yeah. Because, you know, after Glasses, we almost always will take the feature out for dinner. And example, not last show with Edwin, but the show before that. So we take everybody out. We go to Cabo. And a few other people come up. And the guy's just sitting there quiet. We're talking about, yeah, you see this YouTube video, this poet. Oh, man, I'm going to see that poet this time. Da-da-da. Yeah. And... Oh man, I love the spray paint that this guy used on this piece. And you know, we're just talking about all these different little things. And there's a guy there like just looking very awkward. So, you know, you try to chime in and yeah. see what you're into. And then eventually we pulled something out, so it just turned into a random conversation about yeah. physics.
Okay.
But we still we found a way to include him, but yeah. it was just like
it's difficult.
Yeah, it's like yeah. I don't know what to talk. Where is it? So how about the Mets? Oh, yeah. That's right. None of us here watch sports.
That's interesting. What about like a relationship? Anything like that happening?
I have no idea what that word means. I'm in love with the bar.
Yeah.
So does that count?
Have you had? What was your last like serious relationship?
I don't know, man. I have no idea. It's not a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a poet for a reason.
So it's been a while then.
Yeah.
What do you think at this point you really just, is it just, what would it take? What kind of person do you think it would take for you to be able to get into a relationship? Would she have to be a poet? Or would she have to have...
The most patient woman in the world.
Yeah.
Because I am stupid.
But you think you would need somebody that's equally passionate about...
If not the arts, at least helping people.
Yeah.
Because I've been talking to a few people, a few ladies the past few months off and on, and it's just kind of like, it turns into, so what are your passions? What do you want to do? Nah. Mm-hmm. Like, you're 25. You should know what you want to do with your life by now.
Yeah.
What you're passionate about other than going to Black's Beach for the Friday night parties. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's kind of like, oh, all right, meh.
Yeah. So you just kind of like lose interest because you do, that's something that you need then yeah, in a person.
Yeah. I need something interesting. She can't just be hot.
Yeah.
That just drops my interest very quickly. I'm like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well.
Do you think it would be a good idea to date another poet?
Fuck no. There is a saying in the poetry community, never date a poet.
Okay. Does anybody break that rule? Do people break that rule?
Oh, yeah, they do. Okay, and it's the worst idea they've ever had in their life. Is when you date a poet, you, like, probably the same thing with a comedian.
Yep.
Anything in your life is subject to become fodder for a poem.
Yeah.
Any argument could become fodder for a poem. Freaking everything. Like, oh, God.
More competitive, maybe.
Oh, yeah, especially mm-hmm. the poets who are really serious into slam, because... For some reason, happy poems don't do well in slam. You talk about how great your life is and yeah. that you just got a raise. Yeah, no, that's going to score all zeros.
It's the same for comedy.
Yeah. Oh, God. I guess people just want to hear your suffering.
Yeah.
So you talk about the abortion your girlfriend had. That's going to be a perfect score.
Yeah.
You're going on to the next round. High five.
Yeah.
You just won the $50 for that night. That's what happened. So... Ladies, if you're interested in a poet, don't do that shit.
Yeah.
It's a bad fucking idea.
So it's just difficult to date all around then.
Oh, yeah.
As long if you're a poet then.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't know anybody that's that are both artists that are in a relationship working out?
Yeah, Carla and Mario.
They're both poets?
They're both writers. Yeah.
Okay.
But she's a slam poet. He does prose, so... I guess that helps them out because yeah. now they don't have to compete against each other, literally.
Yeah.
But no, not too many.
For the most part, it's probably a better idea to steer away.
Yeah,
they're the exception to the rule.
When I see artists like dating, it's usually like a visual artist and a poet, or a musician and a poet. You know, different kinds. So they're bringing different stuff to the table, but.
Yeah,
two melodramatic people in the same room. That's just awful.
Yeah,
the whole thing just makes me angry.
Yeah. So that's not, you're not looking for that then. But you do, no. If you were to find somebody, then it would have to be a situation like you said.
Yeah.
Passionate about something. It's important.
Yeah, it's something real. Yeah.
Okay. So, are you afraid of death?
I think that's a common one with everyone. You people want to say no, I'm alpha male, but no, I've been close enough to it enough to know yes I am.
Yeah,
you know, I was born with a hole in my heart. I was projected to not make it past 7 months.
Yeah,
then I got hit in the head with a rock, and like technically I had been dead for 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Freaking, I was in a really bad car wreck right before I just said, screw this, I'm not driving anymore. That hospitalized me for a week. And you actually can't see it too much anymore, but my mouth was ripped open.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like the Joker, where you're like, how do I got these scars kind of thing.
Wow.
Guns pulled on me by cops and by street thugs. So, yeah, don't trust anybody. Trust no one. Hashtag.
That is a lot of near-death experiences, right?
Yeah,
there, Jesus
so
Christ.
Like, if you say you're not afraid to death, you haven't lived.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I am.
Yeah. What about it, do you think, is the thing that scares you?
Well, it's pretty fucking permanent. That's one. It's like, I mean, you're dead forever. And I'm a big fan of science, and seeing as there's no empirical evidence of an afterlife or reincarnation, nah, man.
Yeah.
I don't, yeah. But it's going to happen, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sooner or later, you're going to become worm food. I just hope I fertilize some soil very well.
Is that ever a motivator for you, the fear?
To do as much as I can with each day, yes.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. People, you know, I don't know if you've been to a funeral, but people say silly things like, oh, gone too soon. Like, well, if you look at the state of nature, from the time you're swimming up those walls into your mom, everything is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
So like every day is a blessing. You're like breathing in, something is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
It's just the way nature is. Nature is a very scary, vindictive monster.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah, if you're not trying to exploit every opportunity you can in life, you're not trying to do the most with your life, why?
Yeah. There is people like that, though. Is that a difficult thing for you to deal with? Because I know
it's hard for me to respect people like that.
It
is very difficult. I want to be a good human being. You know, I want to be moral and respect everyone. But people who aren't trying to do anything with their life, I don't care what it is, as long as they're happy or in being of value to other people. That's all that really matters. But you're not trying to do anything.
Yeah.
You're just kind of there, existing. Please stop.
No, I've ruined relationships because of that. Not like with significant others, but like friends that I just pushed away because it's like you're just kind of wasting my time.
Yeah.
And it seems messed up to say it, but it is a very difficult thing because I am terrified of dying and I want to make sure that I'm doing as much as I possibly can to have like such a, like I think it's like when I have anxiety, I just like visualize the minutes slipping away.
Oh yeah.
And every minute's like, oh my god, that's another minute of something that I could have done.
Yeah, right. It's one of the things why I wake up stupid early. I always have.
Yeah.
I'm up and out of bed ready for the world about 5:30.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because the way I look at it, you could sleep 6 hours, you gotta work 8. So you're left with another 8 full hours to do whatever you want to be as productive as you can.
Yeah.
If you're spending that watching Oprah and on Facebook and the Instagrams, you fucked up.
It's hard for you to relax then.
Oh, why? Why relax? I have all eternity to relax when they plant me, man.
Do you think the people that are not passionate don't have that fear of death?
I think everybody does. If you didn't, you would walk up to the biggest blood in the street and then slap their whatever bloods have in their hands out and talk about their mom.
Yeah.
But you don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a natural occurrence.
Yeah.
unless you're 5150, then you just zero fucks. But that's usually because of some kind of medical aid.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're doing something else.
Yeah, definitely.
But no, it's non-passionate people, they're afraid of it. I just don't think they care. Apathy is a big problem with our generation right now.
Yeah.
You know, we live in one of the most educated generations in America, the most well-informed generations in America, but most millennials don't vote.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that they don't care. It's they're lazy.
Yeah. So now that you're doing all these things, mm-hmm. How has that changed your psychology? Like, do you feel like you have a different outlook on things than you used to?
Yes. Completely. Hands down. Because a lot of it comes from poetry. Because, you know, you don't have to be in a classroom to be learning anything. You don't have to be in a collegiate environment to have education.
What was like a realization that you had after you started getting into it, or even recently, that you had where you're like, oh yeah, this has helped me out in this way, and I'm a better person because of it?
Well, a lot of the poems is especially any ladies' night at any event is going to be, as a man, it's going to be a very big learning experience.
Yeah,
because you know, we all live our lives and just don't pay attention to things. And then you'll hear terms like rape culture, and like, I don't know what that means, whatever. Or feminist, and you're like, oh, they all hate men. Mm-hmm. Then you start you can go to a ladies' night, and you start hearing these things, like, all right, that's what they're talking about. Oh, okay, no, I need to research this, because that sounds like something I should know.
Yeah.
I have a mom. I don't want things like that to happen to my mom. Let me learn about this.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that. So it spoken word in itself has, I guess, turned me into a male feminist, because there's things that I see and that I notice that before poetry, it never came to my mind.
Very interesting.
I was very much anti quote unquote illegal immigration until a lot of Blanca's poems. And then I started like, well, she has some points.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I started really looking into it and learning the history behind what legal, big air bunnies on that, audience, because you can't see, legal immigration and illegal, and learning that this was all made to keep certain people out. It wasn't even to protect the borders and stop people from taking jobs. It's all of our immigration laws are made to keep the Chinese out and the Italians. That's it. So I don't agree with that. So therefore, learning the steps that went down along the way, no. So that's what this whole thing has done, is it's just like really opened my mind to thinking about things differently.
Really interesting. Yeah, I can imagine like hearing that many different type of perspectives would probably make you extremely empathetic.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, things that I didn't even care about. Like, if you would have talked to me, Glasses has been around 4 years, you would have talked to me about 5.5 years, no, 4.5 years ago, about gay marriage. I'm like, who cares?
Yeah.
Why should I care about that?
Yeah.
Now, I'm right there in the front lines, ready to, like, yes, that is some bull crap that you can't marry who you love.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there with friends from Glassless and friends that I met through Glassless at Gay Pride just to show support for my homosexual brethren.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just start learning things like, oh, God.
Yeah,
the things that Asian Americans go through that we never think of, because they're like, oh, what? There's no racism against them. Oh yeah, there is.
And it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, what are some of the insecurities that you go through when you're doing your art? Like, is it a challenge to be like proud of something that you write? Or do you have that artist thing where you're like constantly criticizing, you think everything you write is terrible?
I've never written anything good in my life. I am such a hack.
Yeah.
I will be the first to tell you that.
Yeah.
Everything is a ripoff of something else, but I guess that's everyone. The main insecurity for me is I'm not good enough. I mean, I've performed for schools. I've been interviewed. Well, I'm being interviewed right now. I've been interviewed by a local web-based newspaper. I am the brainchild of starting Glassless Youth, but is he talking to me? No, nobody. I'm just the guy at the door to Glassless. And I sometimes have to check myself, because, you know, like with everyone, these negative thoughts can affect your overall life, not only just your art, just your life in general.
Yeah.
And that negativity is a poison that you got to get out. And I have to remind myself of that constantly, because I was writing something today and I'm about to tear it up. Then I let a friend read, he's like, yo, no, just develop it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. I can write words. I may not be able to spell them, but I can write them.
So is that, if you were to get out really outside of your head and just look at yourself, are you proud of yourself sometimes? Do you think you're okay sometimes?
In some aspects, yes. In some aspects, no. Like, you know, professionally, I think I should have paid more attention, should have actually finished college instead of just saying screw this, mm-hmm. and gotten a real job to where I wouldn't be working menial labor my whole life, but that is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think I should have been more aggressive in pursuing certain women in my life and be married, have children, da da da? Yeah, should have, would have, could have, but you know what, this is the now. And I'm sorry, that baby just completely destroyed me. Oh, that's cool, man.
Just for the listeners, we're interviewing at Sears right now, and there's several children throughout the entire thing, but it's
hey, you know what, though? This is the organic thing that I do.
Yeah, this is the interesting location. We did Denny's with Hassan last time, and now we're doing Sears, so it's good.
This is the Starbucks, then you get to yell all the way.
Let's see how much random locations we can get.
Great. But yeah, I'm a completely insecure person. Is like when I published my book, I have two ebooks that are on Amazon. Don't buy them because it's a waste of your money. I should have spent the money on an editor and I didn't. I apologize to those of you who do buy it. But so my first thought was, okay, I've never done this before. Should I have them publish this book? Did it anyway, and then a friend bought it. It was like, oh, well, you know, you misspell this. I'm like, oh, crap, that's right. I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
I never learned how to spell. And that standard thing of, you know, you learn everything else. I have all these little data and factoids in my brain. I can't spell to save my life. And grammar.
Yeah.
Comma goes where I think there's a breath. So, you know, things like that. And I was really terrified that it wouldn't sell. And here it is almost 3 years later, and I still get random royalties checks.
Nice.
So they all. So it is, someone's buying this.
Yeah.
It's not just my mom buying this one book 15 times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're not huge royalty checks. I can't exactly retire, but,
well, but
waking up to a random $5 check is nice when you have $0 in your account the day before.
Yeah. So how do you deal with these insecurities then?
You just have to remind yourself that you are of value. A big reminder to yourself is starting something new. Oh man, nobody's snapping for my poems. Nobody's laughing for my jokes. And then just start something new and realize how much better it is compared to what you used to do.
Yeah.
Like, you know, sometimes it's baby steps. Sometimes it's from Earth to Mars. And that's why I always tell people, don't throw away, like a lot of young kids will write on their phones. I'm like, no, don't write your poems on your phone because you can't keep a catalog.
Yeah.
I have a box full of notebooks. I love to go in there, find that old green one, that first notebook from years ago, open it up and like, wow, yeah, okay, I'm not that bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I may not be the best. I may not be about to cut a record deal with Island Records or Total Def Digital. Which is really weird that Def Jam has just completely made a record label for spoken word poetry. It's like, that's a thing now. Yeah. I was like, okay.
This is news to me.
Oh, no. It's big, too. There's a poet that I think you went to his feature earlier last year.
I usually leave Shane early. Romero.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You have like 50 shows a night.
No.
It's like, I gotta go to like 15 shows. Can I get on before 15? Like, sure, bro. Not a problem. Like, let me just try to spell your name right.
No, that's.
But he actually performed for the UN.
Oh, wow.
He was like anybody, he says, I would do it. He took a picture of the stage at the UN And I was like, whoa, good job. And then from there, Russell Simmons got in contact with him and just started snatching up poets.
He was Russell Simmons with the UN speaking?
Russell Simmons was following him on Instagram.
Oh, right. Okay.
So he's like, all right, you're doing real stuff. And then.
Interesting.
So I was like, oh.
Yeah. That's an interesting career path to take.
Yeah. Well, you know, while everybody.
What's your goal? What do you want to do? Yeah.
My goal is to get Glasses Minds gang profile. I want Glasses Minds to be in every middle school, every high school, and every college in San Diego.
Yeah.
And then branch out from there.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is getting a text message because I have a buddy who's a sheriff. Like, hey, yeah, so I pulled over these kids and then I saw they had a Glasses Minds sticker. So I let them off with a warning. He was like, thank you, man.
Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So you want that to be your, I don't know, I guess what you do with yourself. Will you feel like you've made it when you have like this program that you started expanded all over the world?
Well, not necessarily.
Or you think there's more?
Because I'm not egotistical enough to think I can change the world, but I can change my block.
Yeah.
You know, so if it's all over, when it gets all over San Diego. And when we have programs where we actually need to start hiring people,
mm-hmm.
where we can just say, all right, I need to start delegating this out, that's when I feel I've made it. I could win the lottery right now, like $8 million, whatever. I don't even know if that's a lot of money anymore. I don't know. Like, I have such a low cost of living. It's like 50 bucks, I'm set for the month. Yeah, that to me is making it when I'm officially affecting multiple lives for the positive.
Okay.
Because that's something that makes me happy to do.
Yeah. What about in terms of like your own writing? Do you want to get to a certain point like that where you're...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would like to do more paid features because every artist would love to get paid for their work. That's just the recognition of like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
But paid features enough to where I don't have to work these kinds of jobs. Granted, I know that turns into nightly different open mics, and you do have to start traveling, but I would like that. Being a traveling poet would be pretty cool.
You're down for that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have a wife and kids. What's stopping me? Other than talent.
Yeah. do you ever have to deal with, like, maybe jealousy from other people that are your peers that suddenly start getting really good? Is it difficult to watch, even though you're proud of them, friends? It could be friends that you just all of a sudden are super talented, and it's kind of like, Jesus, like, how did you get so good? I feel so shitty about myself.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's this weird thing. Like, Roland in particular, we both started at the same time.
Yeah.
He has, like, a couple of months on me.
Mm-hmm.
One of those kinds of things. But, you know, he will rehearse the hell out of his poems and get really good, and he like get booked features, and he like get invitational slams to where you have to be asked to perform, stuff like that all the time. He will perform all over Southern California. I have not made it to Vista. I've done a handful of shows in San Diego. For the most part, I'm in Oceanside. So it's one of these like, what does he have that I don't have?
Mm-hmm.
Then I think about it, like, oh, that's right, he's personable. I think about my whole persona. My persona is like the irritable guy, you know?
Yeah. So you know how people kind of have that thing where it's like, oh, the most like art, like the best art comes from like this really messed up place. Like, do you think now that you think you're better now that you're kind of like doing okay? Or do you think you kind of still kind of romanticize that, like, nah, burn it all down and then I'll be like that, like, dark artist? Or
no, I can write. It's involuntary. I write dark no matter what. I was trying to write a happy poem today and it's turned into blood and guts. And
do people do that?
Yeah.
Is it good?
But they are.
Yeah.
Depending on
who does it.
If it's happy poem like Britney Spears, no, it's not good. If it's happy poem, like, you know what, I've gone through this, but look at this.
Yeah.
It's awesome. There's one poet, The Saint. I mean, the entire poem's about bacon and how much he loves bacon.
Yeah.
It's a happy poem. Nothing sad about it.
Yeah.
Fuck, I love bacon too. I mean, I was reading the Quran with strips of bacon, like, you know, Jesus pops up in this a lot. But yeah, it was like, so you do have things like that, you know, a little bit happier. But for the most part, if you're going to get into slams and you're trying to progress your career like that, no, you better go dark. you better and you better go real too. So if you're not crying by the end of your writing, you might as well just fucking stop.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, I bring myself into depression.
Yeah.
And not one of those like, oh, I feel bad for a few hours, and like I woke up and was like, Jesus, my life is worthless. Existential crisis.
Yeah.
You're at work. You're silent.
Interesting.
Like, yeah. It's,
are you attracted to that kind of thing? Do you?
If I was, I wouldn't be doing it for so long.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you find yourself more drawn, like maybe a positive outlook on negative things? Because I mean, that's kind of how.
Definitely.
I'm like really into all that stuff, but not in a way. I think that like I kind of like my favorite thing is to kind of make light of things that are really horrible.
Yeah,
because it's like I guess my way of just coping with things. I don't like to take anything too seriously.
Hey, like Van Wilder said, don't take life too seriously. You'll never get out alive.
So, would you similarly look at some of these ideas and then try to like maybe get drawn to them because you're like, oh, I can do something with this. This will inspire me. Being around this kind of thing is like fuel. So,
Well, in the moment, no.
Yeah,
in the moment, you want it done, but. A lot of times, I can't speak for other writers, but what I'll do is I'll write about it to help myself think about it, help me get the stuff out. I may not perform it or anything like that. They go into my catalog of dead poems, but it does help me overcome. So, yeah, I actually do think there's a healthy benefit to the negative aspects of one's life, because what's the value of having an easy life?
Yeah.
You know, what's the value of things being nice all the time?
So do you get kind of panicked if things are going too well?
Kind of, yeah. 'Cause I'm waiting for the shitstorm.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like I like it when they're slightly rocky, but okay rocky.
Mm-hmm.
When things are too nice, you know, you just got a new girl, got a visit at work, you found out that your penis comes out with Jesus and cherubims when you go to urinate. And then right after, you get shot in the face with a shotgun full of rock salt. That's how it works.
What about if you're doing really well in your poetry, just like you're just writing a lot of good stuff and people are really into it? Do you let yourself enjoy that, or do you kind of feel like, oh, man, I'm going to start sucking pretty soon?
No, I never let myself start doing that one. What I start doing is I just keep rehearsing those ones.
Yeah.
And it turns into the other end of it where I'm rehearsing these poems that are killing so much, I haven't written anything. And I don't have any new work.
Yeah.
And now people are getting tired of it.
Is there pressure like to constantly be coming up with new stuff, especially performing at the same place constantly?
Man, you're asking a question that you already know the answer to. Because... when you're a traveling poet, you can do the same six poems every night for 6 months. All right. Just in North County, the main spoken word open mics are Glasses Mines and The Ruckus. There used to be others, but they just kind of faded away. So those are two.
Mm-hmm.
Between those two, if I do the same poem twice in 1 month, the same people, different people, or the same people are going to be hearing it.
Yeah.
Because everybody goes to the same ones. Most people will travel up and around, like, you know, go to San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Some folks even go as far as Long Beach or L.A. But right here in San Diego, the same people are going to be hearing it. So they're like, oh, yeah, he dropped that line. Remember that line he dropped? Yeah, let's talk to him later about that line he dropped.
Yeah.
Because they're not forgiving.
Yeah.
They don't understand.
So is it pressure performing in front of, like, your friends?
Friends are the worst because...
Yeah, because they know all your stuff and they kind of... For the most part, is it like a pretty supportive scene?
Yes.
What about outside of Glassless? I know you guys are all friends, but like outside of that, are poets pretty friendly with each other and welcoming to the...
I want
to
say yes, but I'll be lying. It depends on what venue.
Yeah.
And okay, so you go to DPL in Hollywood. Yeah, they're all supportive. They all love it because it's ran and operated by seasoned vets. Like... Sheehan created California poetry. There was no poetry in California until Sheehan.
Okay.
Like, hands down, anyone says anything different, they don't know the history of spoken word. You know, you got Simply Cat, all these amazing people there. And you got all these amazing people in San Diego. And then you'll go to this random one that you've never heard of in Bakersfield. And they don't like your poetry because it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be mean about it, though. Or
while you're on stage? Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because in Slam Rules, you're allowed to boo. Yes.
Ouch.
A lot of places don't do it, but PSI certified slam rules, they call it the Chicago rules, because the Chicago rules are the mean rules. So you're allowed to boo or hiss. So you'll do a poem. It's not a slam, but suddenly you just hear,
yeah.
It's like, I will fight you right now.
That's like, harsh.
Yeah, it's like, what? You couldn't wait? Yeah. Seriously?
that's crazy. What do you, people just straight up boo your poems?
Oh, yeah. They'll boo. They'll hiss. A lot of times because most people don't like that.
Yeah.
Because they're like, yo, he's sharing his pain. And you're hissing. That's kind of fucked up. So they'll snap, or they'll cheer louder. So they'll pick you up where you're falling.
What has to be going on in a poem for somebody to be hissing?
Anything.
But what's the scenario? Like, you just aren't good.
I've seen it at not nationals, but I've seen it. And the situation was one of those things. Like, it wasn't well rehearsed. It wasn't that it was a bad poem. It just wasn't well rehearsed. They're dropping lines. Stumbling a lot, stopping a lot, and the person started hissing. Like, well,
oh my goodness!
Maybe it's a new poem. Maybe you should start performing more than you're saying.
But it is allowed, so you can't really say anything when that's happening. Then,
yeah, so like, just kind of deal with it. Suck it up.
Jesus Christ! Yeah, that seems so intense, just because, like, heckling is such a like hated thing in the comedy scene.
Oh yeah, no, it's so, poetry, but yeah, people fucking do it.
But it's almost allowed. You're saying it's allowed in these certain specific situations. So it's just. Crazy.
Yeah. But it doesn't happen often.
Yeah.
It is a thing. But it is. Yeah. It's like, it is a noun.
Has that ever happened to you?
No.
What is bombing for a poet? Is it you just fuck up?
Oh, man. You get the golf clap. All right. So you get snaps. You're, go in. Yeah, poet. Say it.
Yeah.
Then you'll know you're not doing well is when you just get this.
Silence.
Dead silence. Their facial expression isn't changing.
Yeah.
Or people just start looking at their phone, like, oh, is it been 3 minutes yet? This is really long.
Yeah. And then you get down, and then it's just kind of like little reaction.
Yeah, like the.
Yeah. But it is. I mean, it could be possible that they are enjoying it and just not an active participating crowd, or
that is true. But most spoken word crowds are—they know to be active, okay. To be loud. If you ever get the chance, go to a slam. I'll invite you to the next one in La Paloma.
For sure.
Is you get people who aren't used to slams, so they're trying to be quiet and hear the poetry. Then you get the people who are used to slams, and it is a circus.
Yeah.
Like me.
So I guess you would know. If the person before you did really well and then you went up, that's how you know then.
Yeah, because like a poem is loud. You usually can't hear most of the poem.
Oh my god!
In a slam, especially at nationals, because you have teams being sent from all 50 states and Canada, and some from Mexico, all performing. So people are like, "Oh man, you hear that line?" Da, 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 da. And then the next person, to be or not to be.
Yeah.
Radio silence. Ouch. Yeah, so it's like the silence is, that's when you know you're not doing well.
Yeah.
And that's when you start, you'll see it at Glasses, when people start realizing that nobody, if they're reading and they're looking down and they're realizing they're not hearing any snaps or or anything, they'll start to speed up because you just want to hurry up and get off stage.
Oh.
It's like,
there's nothing you can do once that happens.
Because you can't just be like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, you just got to just finish the poem and leave.
And you can't really do anything else either because, I mean, that's all you...
Yeah.
Like, with comedy, if you have a joke and it's not going well, you're just like...
Transition
to something else. I'm going to stop doing that joke or I'll start talking to the audience. And like when you're doing a poem, it's got to like I just have to get through this now.
Oh, yeah.
Can you do anything to kind of turn it around? Or once they don't like the poem, it's pretty much over?
No, you can, but it's very hard.
Yeah.
Once you lose them, you've lost them, but you can't get them back.
Mm-hmm.
A big one is what we call go in, is where you start talking loud, you start talking fast, and you start getting really adamant about what you're saying. That will draw their attention back to you.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of people can start getting timid, and you can't go conservative and then regress from being conservative. So you have to get big and then bigger and then bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And a big thing that a lot of people, especially like the Glasses Youth Kids, because a lot of them have hit national stages or, you know, they've progressed other than just local to open mics. You have to learn how to act.
Yeah.
And you just have to get really big and make everything extremely eccentric. Big hand movements, big eyes, you know, it's like people they'll go from their head turned talking to their girlfriend to back to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're like, what I just missed. He must have said something crazy because he's just going, he's going at it right now.
Does that ever happen where they try to get bigger and then still nothing happens?
It does, but not usually. When you start getting bigger and like you really start doing it, you start feeling yourself a little bit. So you give a better performance.
Mm-hmm. So in the scene, whether it be glassless or outside, where you guys see other performers or know other performers, what is the thing that you think makes a good poet? What do you like to see?
Change.
Yeah.
Versatility of writing. A good poet is someone who's not afraid to explore their own writing. Because right now, I'm not trying to trash talk anyone, so I'm not going to use any names, but Rudy Francisco, he's the guy that you want to look to in poetry in general. He's like, YouTube him. He's an amazing poet. He's a great guy. Comes to Glasses a lot. He's like just good people all around.
Yeah.
But in San Diego, because he's born and raised here, everyone's trying to be Rudy Francisco. So it's that thing. Like it's a million and one Rudys.
Yeah.
And so you just have that to deal with.
Okay. So you see people just kind of like trying to do an imitation of him.
Yeah, and it's like it gets old.
What qualities do the people that you really like right now that you think are really talented in your group, what do they have that makes them good poets, in your opinion?
Okay, well, you have Sophia Sandoval, and she's a great writer just in general, but what makes her a great poet is she engages the audience with her metaphors.
Mm-hmm.
So she's not necessarily looking at you saying anything. She's pulling you in and wrapping you in the spider web. And next thing you know, you're just there and she's got you.
Mm-hmm.
Cheyenne is a great poet because she has a booming voice. She does, like, if she uses a microphone, you're going deaf. Mm-hmm. Like she has power behind her voice.
Yeah.
She's not mousy. Roland, hands down, is a great poet because he is extremely versatile, and he goes back to exploration of work. Is like he did a persona piece where he went full persona. A lot of people will do a persona piece, their own voice, yada yada. He puts on an accent, and like it's pretty much a freaking monologue. And then you got guys like Steven, where he's not the greatest writer at all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, he's a great writer, but by way of spoken word, no, not at all. But what makes him amazing is he tries. He tries to do comedy and blend it with something serious while making fun of that serious thing, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this really nice feng shui in his writing. It's a gorgeous dichotomy,
okay.
But a lot of people aren't smart enough to catch it, which sounds fucked up, but it's true. So they just go, why is he talking about, I don't understand what he's saying. Why is he talking about alien? Like, he's not talking about alien. That's an extended metaphor. It's like, how do you call yourself a writer?
Yeah. Okay. So what do you mean when you say, like, versatility? What are some of these elements that...
We've all heard the angry black poet. We've all heard the angry woman poet. We've all heard the angry homosexual poet. Write about something else.
Yeah.
You know, it's not everything... It has to be about your ethnicity or your sexuality or your gender.
Mm-hmm.
Is write about food, write about a social issue, write about yourself, write about someone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do an epistle, do a catalog. You know, it's like there's multiple a limerick. There's multiple different kinds of poems you can do. Like, there's one poet that I'm completely in love with his work, and I wish he would publish a book. And I keep texting him, like, when's that book coming out? And he won't respond because he's a jerk. But Donnie Jackson, he's a poet based out of L.A. And this is where it goes to versatility. If you could take any of his poems and section it out, and you start realizing his poem is a bunch of haikus.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so you're not actually listening to one poem. You're listening to, 3 minutes of haikus.
Okay.
That are just one topic.
Yeah, so just different from things that everybody else is doing. Yeah, it's
like that kind of exploration. And I don't want to pump my own horn, but I do a lot of first person, where if you listen to my poems, it's very much like I'm talking to you. I'm not giving you a poem. I'm just talking.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that, where you're doing something different than what other people are doing. You're not doing the same exact thing of being the Too Many Rudy Club.
Yeah.
Or hey, I just saw this poet on YouTube. I'm going to do that same exact poem. I'm going to change three words, which happens.
That happens?
Yes.
Is that like doing other people's poems? Is that really vilified in the...
Oh, that'll get you shot.
Yeah.
Like, poetry beefs are real, yeah. And they are deep.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's like, no.
Who has poetry beef with each other?
Well, I'm not saying nothing. I don't mean that like... topic, yeah. But here's an example. I'm going to bring up Rudy again, but... Rudy gets text messages while he's in Glass's Minds about people, say, in New Jersey doing his poem as an original. And it's like, okay. You're going to do Scars? That's his like signature piece. Everyone yeah. knows it. It's been around since like 2006.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You're going to try and pass that off as yours?
Yeah.
Not a good idea.
Have you guys ever encountered that at Glassless?
Not so much.
Yeah.
Because we have a lot of people who are just really passionate about their own art.
Yeah. If something's too similar, is that a thing that you guys will criticize?
No, we won't criticize it, mm-hmm. but we will tell you, somebody will tell you eventually, you
yeah.
gotta change it up. That sounds too much like this poem.
Okay, so this happened then.
Yeah, because this happened to me.
Yeah.
I went to Hollywood, performed, and I never performed the poem again because I realized in the middle of my poem what it sounded like. It was talking about, I want to love, like this, da-da-da, and then there's the poet Sheehan, who I brought up earlier, who created California Poetry. Is on Deaf Poetry Jam back in like 1998 doing a love like. Mm. And it sound, my poem sound exactly like his.
Yeah.
It sound like I just took his poem and changed thing. It changed
yeah.
a love, what the love was like. I just changed the simile
yeah.
and kept everything else. And I didn't realize it was like, oh.
So this was a whole poem or a specific?
No, it was a whole poem.
The whole poem.
Yeah, I haven't done it since.
Does that kind of parallel thinking happen often where somebody will come up with the same line and then you kind of have to change, like, oh, that person already does that line? Or is like kind of taking and sampling like pretty like accepted in the poetry scene?
And if it is accepted if you directly reference the quote.
Okay.
Because it's plagiarism.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're taking...
But if it's accidental, then yeah, somebody will be like, oh, somebody already said that, and then you have to change it.
Yeah, or like, hey, so-and-so says in this poem, and
yeah.
send you a link or something, or the page,
okay.
then you just quote it.
Yeah.
Bam, that easy. Problem solved. But I mean, like, whole poems.
Oh, that's nice. At least you got that.
Stolen.
Yeah. What if the person doesn't know who it's being quoted by then? Is that kind of weird?
Yeah, a little bit. Because it's like, hey, I heard this one guy say something that's kind of like that vaguely once at one time on this internet channel
yeah.
that I was watching. But yeah, it's like anything. You have comic thieves, like how people said for years Dane Cook stole Louis C.K.'s whole
yeah.
act, which turns out that was completely incorrect. They even addressed it on the show.
I think they thought he stole a couple of jokes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we have... Just like as an example, I wrote a joke and I posted it on Facebook. It was about people that do like those, which Captain America or which Avengers character are you or whatever.
Yeah.
And I posted it up and then somebody tagged one of my comic friends. And then that comic friend sent me a link to his Twitter where he had not the same joke, but pretty much the same idea. It was like.
Yeah.
Criticizing this specific thing, and I was like, well, damn, that sucks.
Yeah,
like, what if I was like, I didn't steal that from you, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was not intentional.
Does that kind of thing happen with poetry as well?
Yeah, it's happened to me.
Have you ever had to talk to somebody about it?
No, it's not one of those things where you're going to get cornered in the back of a room like, hey, yo, you have to change your line and we're going to cut you. It's just one of those like, hey, you know, this sounds really similar to this.
Okay.
But a lot of times what people will do, like I said, they'll just quote it and like call it a day.
It's a nice little way to fix it.
Yeah, or completely omit the line. That's what I do, is I don't like quoting. Because,
it's
you know, it's like, you know, sometimes you drop lines and then
yeah.
you drop the fact like so-and-so said, then it's like, oh,
okay, yeah, it kind of takes it out of it a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, screw this, whatever.
Yeah.
Is it not needed? Then it doesn't need to be there.
All right. We're going to wrap it up a little bit here. Do you have any final thoughts about what we've been talking about? Anything you want to get out there? Do you want to plug the show?
Yeah. Come out to Glasses Minds. We are at 219 North Coast Highway every second and fourth Thursday. And every third Thursday, we have Glassless Youth. It is 19 and under to perform. Anyone can come listen. Just don't be weird. But yeah, and what I would like to say as a wrap up is live your dream, man. you don't have enough time and you don't know how much time you have. Life is too short to be pissed off and irritated that you're not happy with your life, because at the end, you're not happy because of you, not anybody else.
All right, man. Thank you so much. That was the episode, guys. I hope you enjoy it. Have a good one.
All right, guys, that was the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. And please subscribe if you haven't done so yet. Maybe give a rating. I don't know what any of this stuff is. I'm just enjoying doing these, and I hope whoever is listening is also doing that. Hopefully we get some more people that are interested in it, and hopefully I get some more artists. If anybody wants to reach out to me that knows some good artists that would like to talk to me, that you think would like to open up and have these deep discussions, then just let me know. You can find me on Facebook at The David Zafra, and also make sure you check out Herd Sims at Glassless Mind, 2nd and 4th Thursday. Alright, guys, have a great life. It's a wrong, we can't stay still. I've been drinking and busting too, and I've been thinking of busting you. I'm not the motherfucker.